The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at The Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's The Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.
Hi, I'm Liz Alterman, your host of the Bookhouse podcast. Today, I'm speaking with author and writing instructor Michelle Cameron, whose novel Napoleon's Mirage hit bookshelves November 12th. This work of historical fiction is the long-awaited sequel to the award-winning novel Beyond the Ghetto Gates. Michelle is also the author of Babylon, The Fruit of Her Hands, and In the Shadow of the Globe. Welcome, Michelle. I'm so excited to chat with you today.
Thank you, Liz. I'm really happy to be here this morning.
Oh, good. So congratulations on the release of Napoleon's Mirage. I was hoping you could share with listeners a bit about the story and then tell us if it was always your intention to write a sequel.
Absolutely. So Napoleon's Mirage is the sequel, as you said, to Beyond the Ghetto Gates. It takes Napoleon and a number of his soldiers, some of whom we got to meet in Beyond the Ghetto Gates, on this very strange expedition to Egypt and eventually to Israel when Napoleon is being faced with Mameluke forces sent by the Turks. I call this expedition weird because, you know, Napoleon in Egypt, who would have thought that?
But, right.
But his motivation is really to thwart the British, who sort of control the trade routes, especially, you know, from India. And he had ambitions to go to India himself, ambitions he never realized. I also call it very odd because he took with him some 200 plus savants. Writers, architects, scientists, mathematicians. And in this, he was emulating Alexander the Great, who also took, you know, this type of person along with him on his military expeditions. And this actually would end up leading to a lot of Egyptology, especially in France, as these experts really got to know a lot more about Egypt than they had known in the beginning. Napoleon's Mirage is also has elements of romance in it. In Beyond the Ghetto Gates, we met Morel de Ancona.
Yes, I loved her, and I'm so excited to read this for fans of historical fiction and romance. Definitely to check out Beyond the Ghetto Gates first, because it's such a sweeping story. I learned so much.
Oh, that's wonderful. So in any case, poor Morel, who, as she would say repeatedly, you know, made love to one soldier once, mm-hmm. is basically being regarded as a ruined woman in the Jewish community in which she lives. And she is struggling for all sorts of reasons to keep her business, which is a ketubah workshop, a Jewish marriage certificate workshop, going in the face of a lot of resistance, especially taxes from the French. And she is also yearning for Daniel, who is now mm-hmm. a young lieutenant in Napoleon's forces, and he returns her regard, but neither of them really know this, and it has to be through the medium of letters. The problem is that the British naval forces have blockaded Egypt. And so there are no letters going through. So is what happens to a long distance relationship in the late 18th century when you can't talk to one another.
Wow, we think long distance is hard now.
Oh, we have it. We have it easy.
Right, right. Oh, wow. And so, you know, I loved the characters in Beyond the Ghetto Gates. Was it your intention to write the sequel? Did they stay with you? Did you continue to hear those voices? Or was that something that you had in mind so that you could leave those sort of avenues open to write the sequel as you were working on Beyond the Ghetto Gates?
So interestingly enough, this was always intended to be a trilogy, not just one book and then another. And in fact, I wrote an entire novel that preceded Beyond the Ghetto Gates and talked about the Jews during the French Revolution itself. During the French Revolution, it was the first time that the Jews received citizenship from any European country for millennia. And so I wrote an entire novel. It included Daniel and Christoph. They were 9 years old at that point, as well as a new character in Napoleon's Mirage, Ethan, who will play a significant role. So I discovered after I wrote that book that it wasn't good enough to publish. The politics were so complex. And I was struggling to find the story. So I basically put it aside, but I knew these characters intimately at this point, and that propelled me into Beyond the Ghetto Gates and then into Napoleon's Mirage. So I don't know, maybe someday I'll go back and fix that first book, but for right now, it's just the two books.
Okay, well, I think, and I'm hoping to touch on this later in our conversation, but I feel like since you are such a wonderful writing instructor, and for our listeners, Michelle has helped me workshop my novel, The Perfect Neighborhood. And so I would have to say that I like to think no writing is ever wasted. And I'm working on something new now. And I think my struggle is I have the plot, but not the characters. And so I think when you have the characters, that is just such a huge benefit. So it sounds like, you know, in a way, the work you did on that first novel really kind of set you up for success with the following ones. Would you say that's true?
I would say that's true. And I would say in Beyond the Ghetto Gates, I struggled a little with morale. So I think you're absolutely right. You know, one of the first things you really do need to do is nail down the characters, because the moment you know them, you know how they will operate in any given circumstance.
Exactly. And their dialogue, almost, you almost don't have to think about it. It's almost like a reflex, like they're speaking through you. Whereas if you don't know them, they could say anything.
Exactly. Now, and my best days in writing are always the days when the characters just sort of take over. And I don't have to, you're right, you don't have to think about it at all. You just have to, your fingers have to keep up with what they're saying.
Yes. Unfortunately, I haven't had a day like that in a while.
I am sure you will get there, Liz.
I have to get back there. Maybe I need more coffee. But another thing I'd love to talk about, Michelle, is so Michelle and I are neighbors. We're in the same town. And I always admire how many book clubs you attend. And so I was hoping you could share a little bit for maybe authors who might be listening, how you go about reaching out to those book clubs. And when you have a sequel, do you feel that marketing, I know, and this we could talk about this too, but I know, unfortunately, some of your launches have coincided with unfortunate world events, and which makes it more challenging. I think, you know, when Beyond the Ghetto Gates came out at the beginning of COVID, is that right?
No, that is absolutely right. I have had the worst luck.
I'm so sorry.
Including, you know, right now, because of course everyone is, you know, either trying to deny that the election results happen or not. No, I really have not had good luck with that. But I will say that at least the COVID situation was actually helpful, because the moment I pivoted to Zoom, I could go to groups in like California and Florida and Chicago, and never left my chair.
I love that.
That was definitely the silver lining for COVID.
Yes.
I will say, you know, a lot of, because I write about Jewish historical fiction, a lot of the groups that I get to go to are affiliated with synagogues or sisterhoods, you know, Jewish community centers. So that is a plus, because trying to reach book clubs is really difficult.
It is, yes.
So I will say, you know, having a niche like that is hugely helpful. And I am right now, for a variety of reasons, I wasn't able to do as much outreach as I wanted to earlier on. So I'm doing some of that now. And it's, I'm hoping, you know, certainly to get many, many of more events. And anyone who is listening, I am absolutely open to that, and would love
right,
to
Zoom or in person if they're low. And I always watch you do so many local things, and I admire that. And I was wondering too, do you think, as since it is a sequel, I'm wondering if you have almost that built-in audience where you can go back to those book clubs and say, hey, listen, I want to see what these characters do next. And I would hope that you would get a warm welcome from all of them.
Well, yes, no, and that has been happening. I will say, though, I was very careful to write this sequel so it could be read as a standalone novel.
Oh, that's great.
And that's very important, because I know people are hesitant to read a sequel, thinking, no, I have to read the first book. But actually, I was at an event last night where the woman who was interviewing me said, no, I read Napoleon's Mirage first. Oh, and yeah. I had no problem just reading this book. And then I went back to Beyond the Ghetto Gates. So I'm hoping some of my readers will do that, especially sure. if they're interested in this odd episode of Napoleon's career.
Absolutely. And that was, you touched on something that I wanted to also ask, maybe if you could share a little bit what you think are the pros and cons of writing a sequel. And I love the idea, because I will say my son a few years ago gave me a novel that was maybe the fifth in a series, and he didn't even check, you know, it was a gift. And I thought, oh man, do I want to go back and find the first four? Not really. So I'll put this in a little free library when he's not looking, and you know, moving on to somebody else. But so I think that standalone is such a benefit. Are there any other sort of tips you would give to writers thinking about sequels, or any, you know, of the benefits, of course, as we talked about, is that you know the character so well, but anything where you had to go back and sort of say, like, now what was the hair color, or the eye color of this character? You know, consistency issues, I think, would be a challenge.
Yeah, no, I think that continuity is very, very important. One of the things that I literally would suggest to anyone who wants to write a sequel is go back, read the first book, or in this series, you know, a couple of books back, and definitely take some notes in terms of what does the reader need to know, the new reader need to know, and what can you not, you know, bog down the work with. I think balance in writing a sequel is really important. You have to remember that you're going to get both a new reader and a reader who's read the previous work. And so you have to give them just enough information so they're not lost, but not so much that the reader of your previous work is like, oh, I know all this already.
Right, like a lengthy recap.
Exactly. I actually used as my inspiration, Gail Godwin wrote two books. One was a sequel of the other. And the first book was Father Melancholy's Daughter, which I absolutely adored. And then she wrote Evensong. And in Evensong, there's literally a paragraph in the book that brings the reader up to date with everything they need to know. Oh. From the first book. Now, I couldn't do such a neat job, because I do have a very large cast of characters, and they are, you know, they're separated by, you know, a lot of miles. So I had to do a few of these recaps. But I think really, the idea is, again, just enough information, but not too much. You want the reader of the previous novel to be sort of reading it, nodding and saying, yeah, I remember.
Exactly. Wow, that's a great point. That's a hard balance to strike, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, it was definitely challenging, but it was also a lot of fun.
I'm sure. Yes. To sort of, I always think of characters as almost like dolls in a toy box that you get to kind of take out and create new scenarios for them.
I love that. That's great.
Oh, thank you. And then I wanted to ask too, I just write, you know, present day, exactly what I know, these neighborhood thrillers where people will often ask me, is that so-and-so? The people feel very familiar, but of course, Napoleon, nobody is going to have too much of a frame of reference in terms of like, oh, I remember when he did that. So I was hoping you could share a little bit about what it's like to dig into the research. How long does it take? How do you know when you've gathered enough? Do you ever, I'm very guilty of going down internet rabbit holes, almost as a stalling tactic. And I was wondering, you know, how do you balance that as well, knowing when the research is exactly what you need, when it's too much? Do you ever find yourself, this is such an interesting tidbit, how do I shoehorn this in here?
Yes, no, absolutely. So on that last point, I've learned that, you know, you don't want to do a research dump just for the sake of, oh, I find this fascinating.
Right.
I want to put this in. It has to serve the story in some way.
Yes.
So there's a lot that you learn that you're like, oh, this is so cool. And then you have to put aside.
Right.
I have a very disciplined approach to research because you're absolutely right. That rabbit hole is so tempting.
Yes.
And I love research. But what I do is I take about 3 months of pure research. And that's really when I find my story.
Oh, that's great.
And then, you know, once I've done that, and I have all my notes and I have my timeline and I have things that I need to be able to move forward with the novel, I will start writing. Now, it doesn't mean that I don't research almost every single day, because there's always that, like, okay, what did they eat in
exactly.
Egypt?
Exactly.
You know,
right, I'm sure.
Everything Napoleon's probably, table. Right.
Yes, everything must raise additional questions.
Absolutely. So I am researching all the way through the writing of the book, all the way through the revisions. But it's what I need to know in that moment, which is actually a big help, because that first 3 months is, let me get my arms around the events, let me get my arms around my story. And then it's like, okay, you know, what would someone have, you know, drunk in a cafe in Akko at this point in time?
That is so interesting. And I think I can't imagine, I say this very often with my freelance work, I can't imagine attempting this without the internet. How about you? I mean, just the time and the effort that would go into this. When I think about, you know, people writing historical fiction in past generations, what a labor of love.
Yeah, no, I have no idea how they did it either. I mean, I use all sorts of different sources. Obviously, you know, I start with books, and I have to applaud my husband, who is wonderful. I will shoot him a note and say, I need this. And 2 days later, it's on my desk.
Oh, wow.
Which is amazing.
Can I clone him?
But I also spend a lot of time with paintings from the period, and as many, you know, first sources as I can find. I was very fortunate in Napoleon's Mirage because I found a book written by a Egyptian Muslim who wrote a book called The French Occupation of Egypt. So I had his voice, I had his thoughts, and I turned him into a character In the novel, because, you know, I was able to get the other side of things, not just, oh, the French coming in and sauntering around and not taking their boots off when they entered a building. But I was able to see the perceptions of the Muslim population while they were, during this period of time, and they were not, they were not pleased.
Sure. Wow. What an interesting adventure for you, really, to discover all of this. It must be, at the end of the day, it must feel like you're holding all of these worlds in your head, and traveling back in time.
Yes, I think that's a great way to put it.
Oh, so interesting. Now, Michelle, I wanted to also ask, as I mentioned, you're a writing instructor, and I so appreciated the workshops that I've taken with you. I was hoping you could share a little bit about how teaching and being part of the writing community sort of informs your own work, and how, I'm sure anytime I've taught something, I feel like I learn just as much in the process. So could you share a little bit about what that means to be part of this community?
No, absolutely. I used to hold a corporate job. And the thing that I wanted more than anything else, especially after my first novel was published, was to embark on what I called the writing life. Yes. But as you know, it's very difficult to exist from what you earn on your novels.
Yes.
Unless I always say, unless lightning strikes, you're not going right. to do it.
Lightning or TikTok, right?
Yes, exactly. But working with other writers, both the adult aspiring novelists that I've worked with, as well as I teach the tweens and the teens, and it's always so inspiring because they bring so much to their work, and I'm always impressed by the level of dedication and the level of writing, and that just absolutely inspires me. And, as you said, teaching solidifies what you sort of know inside of you, but never was able to verbalize before. So I teach the novel workshops, and I teach all three. I teach beginning your novel, continuing your novel, and then what we call the novel continuum. And every single time I'm like, oh, yeah, I should remember that in this chapter of my work.
Right. Like almost like, okay, note to self, I got to write this down. And when you mention inspiration, one thing that I love that the Writer Circle does is send out newsletters celebrating the success of workshop participants and across all ages. And I have to say, I was sort of writing in obscurity as a teenager, and I just would have loved to know that something like this exists. So I think you're doing such a wonderful service to young writers who, putting yourself out there is hard at any age, but I think that you are giving them a platform and inspiration. It's just, I wish this had been around, I hate to date myself, but 30 years ago, 30, 40 years ago.
No, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, my youngest son, who is a phenomenal writer and actually helped me tremendously with both books, but even more the Beyond the Ghetto Gates, had nothing like this. And he really, really, really could have used it. And of course, any writer, I think, needs community, needs the ability to talk to other writers, because we share things that, are very difficult for anyone who's not engaged on this crazy career to appreciate. So I think it's hugely important to have community of writers. And it's just, it's been wonderful being, an integral part of the Writer Circle.
Yes, I loved it. So for our listeners, anyone interested in taking a course, the Writer Circle has a wide array for all ages. So I will definitely link to that in our show notes. And I wanted to ask, I know you also do really wonderful one-day events and retreats. I'm hoping this episode will air in December. So do you have anything, Michelle, for the new year that our listeners could look forward to? And for people who are listening from all over the country, what's wonderful is some are held online as well. So you don't feel like you're missing out if you're not in New Jersey.
Yes, no, we actually, we have a number of actually in-person events coming up. Well, and actually one is online. So in January, we hold our mini retreat, which is a one-day retreat that we hold in Summit, New Jersey. And it's a day just to dedicate to your writing. We do breakout sessions. I tend to teach or assist, because it's not really teaching, in a resolve to write workshop, which is just perfect for the new year when you've got resolutions. Yes, this is the year I'm going to write that novel or write that those short stories. So that's coming up in January. I don't have the dates in front of me, I'm afraid. But also, I'm really excited about another one, which is a virtual. We have Chris Walder, who has done a magnificent job with her own work, using Kickstarter to help fund her work. So she's going to run a Kickstarter for writers.
How interesting.
I know. I'm thinking that I'm going to look at this to help fund my audiobooks, which
I love that.
Yeah. So that's coming up. We do try very hard. We're trying for the spring to organize an agent first panel and then a pitch session.
That would be great. I'm sure people would love that. That's such another hurdle on part of this journey to get an agent, and just writing the query letter is a challenge.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely. And I will also add, since you did mention the query letter, that one of our instructors is going to be doing a virtual query workshop, where she will include like things like the query letter, the dreaded synopsis.
Right. That. Yes. Personally, I find the synopsis even worse than the query letter.
Writing synopses is absolute hell.
It really is. Some people say it's easier to write the whole novel. And sometimes when I sit down to try, I can see the wisdom there. But Michelle, I don't want to keep you. I know you have a million things going on, especially during launch week, but I'd love to know what you're working on now, if you feel like sharing.
Absolutely.
I was going to say, beyond meeting with book clubs and celebrating Napoleon's Mirage.
So, no, absolutely. I'm actually very much in love with my next novel. I went back to my roots, to the Shakespearean period, but I am, because I write Jewish historical fiction, I'm adding a Jewish element to it, where I have brother and sister who are crypto-Jews. They're Jews, but they are hiding their Judaism, because this is a period of time where it was almost illegal to be Jewish. Actually, it was illegal in a lot of cases. And they are translators of various works. And so, and this is the very, very, very fictional part of the story, they assist Shakespeare in finding sources for a lot of his plays. And of course, I haven't written this part yet, but we will get to the dilemma of Merchant of Venice.
Oh, how interesting. Wow, I can see why you're excited about it. This is such a unique idea.
Yeah, no, I find it difficult during promotion to sort of put that aside, but of course that's necessary. Kate Quinn said something really intelligent once on Facebook, that it's so difficult where you are meeting with groups about your previous work, you're promoting the work that's just out there, and then you're trying to write the next one. And that's kind of where I am in a lot of cases.
It's so true. It feels like you're juggling a lot of balls, and I feel like you'll appreciate this. I was very fortunate. I just zoomed into a book club in Colorado to talk about The Perfect Neighborhood, and it was so funny because I'm sort of in a similar boat. I had a suspense novel come out in August, and now I'm sort of outlining something new. But at one point, a participant said, "You know, I have to tell you, I was convinced the pizza guy did it." And all of a sudden, I'm like, "Wait, there was a pizza guy? I don't remember this pizza guy." And so then the more she spoke, I'm like, oh, yes, okay, it's coming back to me. But it's true. It's like you're holding this one world in your head and you've got this other one sort of in your rear view. And then this is in the way back. It's a lot. I mean, I love it. And I love when you can meet with readers who will sort of indulge you in pretending these are all real people. So, but in your case, of course, they're based on real people, but
Well, some of them, not all of them,
right.
but yeah, no, it's true. It is definitely a juggling act in a lot of cases.
It is. And then my final question, which I like to ask everyone, is what are you reading right now that you would recommend to listeners?
So, because of the Shakespeare book, I'm forcing myself to go back to read Hamnet. And
Oh.
I'm saying I'm forcing myself because when I bought the book and I was very excited about it and I started reading and I got so jealous I couldn't keep going because it's beautiful.
I know what you mean. I've had that experience too. Like you just want to close the book and think, oh, I should find a new career.
Exactly. So yeah, so I'm definitely I'm reading that. I'm also still reading a lot of nonfiction. There's one book that I'm reading that I definitely would recommend to anyone who wants to know what it's like to be a writer, which is the story of books, which is really interesting about how authors have had a difficult to publish throughout the years. It's not just today that it's really tough to publish.
Sure. Ooh, that sounds like a great one. I'll have to look for that. And I'll link to that in our notes as well. Well, Michelle, I was hoping you could share with listeners where they can find you. And again, Michelle is available for book clubs via Zoom and organizations. So please let us know where it's best to reach you.
So I do have a contact page on my website, which is michelle-cameron.com. And you can certainly reach me there. And I am both on Facebook and Instagram, and just now joined Threads. Threads?
Ah, yes.
Threads. And I'm toying with the idea of going on Blue Sky. But I've linked to all of these places off of my website. So that's the first place to go.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. Well, Michelle, this has been such a pleasure. I could talk with you all day about writing and books, and thank you for making the time. I know you're exceptionally busy this time of year.
Well, thank you, Liz, for having me. I'm really, I could spend all day talking about it too.
Okay. Thanks again.
All right, my pleasure.
Original production. The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at the Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's the Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.